So this bolt of lightning shot across the universe and inspired me with the idea that we have to do a podcast. And that's what I wanted to tell you. We should do a podcast. Okay, bye.
Okay, I hit record. I did it really fast.
I hit record as well, man. You hit record so much sooner than me.
I have like a 6-second lead on you. If this was a foot race, I would win.
You would win. It's true. Well, welcome to Feature Creep :
built-in microwave :
We decided to build a cult, create a cult.
Yeah, I don't
want to
alarm anybody, but
yes.
We started a cult.
Right. I don't want to alarm anybody, but we've decided to form a cult. That's right. I'm gonna read my own fucking notes.
Yep. So the most essential thing about this is that it's a very high control environment. So I'm going to need you to do the front matter now.
Understood. So the front matter, this is our podcast. I'm Ned. That's Meg. It's a podcast. There's a website, fcbm.io, where you can go and get our RSS feed. If you know what that is, great. If you don't, you just go there and listen. Like, we've got the little web player things if you want to listen to an episode. You're listening to an episode, so I'm kind of assuming you found it or you found a way.
Right.
Good job.
Somehow
you magically
ended up here.
Yeah. So the most important thing about the front matter is there is this lovely person, Dana. Dana is the CEO and co-founder. She did a lot of shit. It's her fault.
It's her fault.
Yeah. So we would.
It never would have even occurred to us.
Nope. But we would love it if you email Dana, dana@fcbm.io, and send us your thoughts about the podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, that's how you do it. If you want to have ideas about the topics, whatever, that's how you do it. We've been around a while. There's lots of episodes. If this one doesn't fit your fancy, but you kind of want to try some more, there's other ones and they'll all be different.
And honestly, the genius of our podcast
is
an emergent property of the whole. And so we encourage you to listen to every single episode to really get
that's true. Picture. That's true. Yeah. Episodically to start at the very beginning. And then complete each one and then move your way up. And then as you get into them and we give you direction to go back and review ones, you'll get those episodes and it'll tell you, we'll refer to another episode and you'll have to go listen to that in that moment. And then, Right.
And if you feel cheated by the subject matter of the episode titled Somebody's Gonna Die, don't blame us. Blame all of the true crime podcasts that gave you unreasonable expectations about everybody else's podcast.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That
not
one
our
in,
fault.
That one in particular. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
You can blame the other ones, but that one we're off the hook for.
Right. So I have to tell you.
Yes.
Last summer, there was a wolf spider that lived on my front porch.
Yes.
And it was one of the biggest ones I've ever seen. And it was very fast. And it would it lived between my storm window and the screen, which is on the inside. And it like created a funnel web that it like lived in. And the view of it from the side through the window is very much like an ant farm where you get this kind of like cutaway.
Yeah.
And I learned things about the like habits of these spiders that haunt me in my sleep. And that when that thing ran around, it was so large and the screen, the window screen is an old like vintage window screen that's made of real metal, like a steel screen. And when it ran across that screen, you could hear it from inside of the house.
Oh, that's a little
not
terrifying.
With the door shut, just with the door open, but nonetheless.
But
like,
you could hear it zipping across
across the and so nothing has moved back in there this year. I need to take the screen off and clean it so that nothing's encouraged to take up residence in the existing web structure.
Is this like Cult of the Web Spider or the
it
Wolf
is.
Spider?
Is it that is. The situation? It basically is, yes. And so now I need to feed it victims to keep sacrifices. Sorry.
Yeah.
Wrong terminology. To like
offerings?
Keep it happy. Offerings of human blood sacrifice.
Yeah. Yeah.
It has a taste for blood now.
Right.
And so it's the Cult of the Spider.
Do you know that it's kind of disappointing? I think that like modern day cults don't. They don't I feel like they don't scratch that itch that we would like come to expect from like a Victorian era retelling of a cult. Like cultists, like worshiping these like elder gods, you know? I feel like
Do you know what I think is missing?
What?
I think that they have substituted the sort of like rigid ritualistic practices for rigid control of any flavor.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like instead of the control being in the structure that you like adhere to and participate in, now the control is of the individual participant and not the rules that form the structure of the thing. Just a guess on my part.
Oh, so it becomes more like everybody's in the cult for a slightly different reason, focused around this like...
Could be. And like, really the thing that unifies everybody is like loyalty to like whoever is supposedly in charge. And
right.
I mean, there's always an element of that, right? But like when I don't know, I always, when I think I know what you're saying, where I'm like, man, old timey cults used to be so much more structured.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like when we, what was that cult we podcasted last week about, and they poisoned people.
Jonestown?
No, food poisoning.
Food poisoning, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Not themselves.
Yeah. They poisoned the general public.
Yeah, the Rajneesh cult, the Ma'anan Sheila, and like the adherence to the cult or whatever poisoned salad bars with salmonella as a trial run for poisoning an entire town so that nobody could show up and vote and then they could take over.
See, like now we're talking plot, right? Like the cultists are plotting. Like fucking, you know. I mean, I really cannot like downplay how much I don't want any of this to ever happen. But I'm just saying from like a sort of intrigue point of view, like this is
for the sake of argument.
For the sake of argument, right? I guess the Haley Abbott cult, Heaven's Gate. They had some intrigue to them, right? Like the sci-fi aspect's fucking great, right? Escape in a fucking spaceship, fucking awesome.
Vivid storytelling,
A+ for sure. I guess for me, that's what it comes down to. Like what I'm trying to get my idea around is like modern cults, I find it disappointing when there's a lack of like good, deep, interesting lore that's like really novel and interesting and like has depth and reflects like the human, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Do you think that the difference might be attributable to the fact that within our lifetime and just a little bit recently before that, capitalism started to like tentacle into literally everything and cults have been capitalized and that's why they're so boring now? Like they're all business cults or like improve yourself and be more productive so you can make more money cults.
Once they've all kind of like pyramid schemes basically or multi-level marketing.
MLM now.
Yeah, they've just gone MLM. Like that's the
It's like cults have gone to the lowest common denominator. Where are all the interesting cults?
Right. Yeah.
I think I have watched like every cult show on both Netflix and HBO at this point.
Yeah. I wonder, I mean, here's just kind of a off the cuff idea about like the take on like cults or the psychology of it, which would be like, you know, I don't fucking know. But the this idea of let me discount everything I'm about to say for the next 5 minutes and then I'll tell you what I was just thinking before it escapes. And it's almost escaped. Fuck damn it, it did escape. The cults, like the thing about like modern cults, like there's less money in that's what it is. So like people have less, it's like telling that the cults are more bland. There's like less to escape from in life now. Like that could be a like on a global sort of historical sense, like we've progressed better as a society, like more people are doing better and so there's less to escape from and there's less need to promise these like outlandish like
I kind of feel like this is why religion is losing influence.
Well, sure. Yeah. No, I mean, absolutely. Right. Like, I mean, from my point of view, cult, religion, no difference. Right. It's a good mm-hmm. story tell. And people are like, oh, I'm buying into that. Let's go. That sounds great. Which is my argument of like, these ones aren't that interesting. So why are, I don't understand. But
mm-hmm. it's the flattening of culture.
It's the flattening of culture. Yeah. Anyway, that idea that it's like that kind of, but like it's an indicator that the fact that capitalism can just trade on the blandness of like the promise of money is like really, really the cult there, right?
That's a good soundbite.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's like the Republican Party, right? Like their promise of mm-hmm. like, you could be rich if don't stop voting for all this shit we're doing, because look how great it is for rich people, and you could be one too.
You could be one too. This could be you. Not this will be you.
No, but it could be you. It could be you. Yeah. Which is the same line with multi-level marketing, right?
Yeah.
It's just like this, look how much money I have. Look how much money you could have if you were able to do these things.
Mm-hmm. I feel like this is kind of like almost puts Silicon Valley into like the like neighborhood of a cult.
Oh, for sure.
Because like so much of the tech coming out of there now is like weird venture capital startup shit and like the AI stuff, which is all a lie.
Right.
So it's like this giant grift. And the way that people like are loyal to the grift is very culty.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird.
It's very strange.
The way people like it is kind of crazy to sit back and watch from the sidelines. Like I won't, aside from the few times that we've done like a weird ChatGPT thing, like the 15 bucks and whatever episode, like I never go near this stuff because I'm like, man, this shit is just a net negative, like no matter which way you slice it. And I think it's kind of crazy like how much people want it to happen
mm-hmm.
and like how aspirational it is,
right?
And what really at the bottom of it is just a labor scam to not mm-hmm. pay people, which is like what employers are always trying to do, but we've regulated most of their behaviors so that at least kind of sort of they can't make you a slave, even though the fact that anybody has health care through their employer basically makes you a slave.
Yep.
It's a life or death matter whether you work there.
No, I mean, even the money is they hold everything over you, right? Like the workforce is like, you know, this is why unions are so important. It's why like the ability to and look, unions are all fucked up. Don't get me wrong. Like there's all kinds of political problems across the spectrum.
Sure.
But it's why that idea is so important. It's why.
Yeah. Nobody's like, saying unions have to be perfect for them to be valuable.
Right.
Like, come on.
Yeah. So anyway, it's.
But people get down on unions all the time. That's why I understand why you said that. Like.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know, people are like, oh, well, this union, they're so dumb, they blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, probably.
Yeah, shitty people can be in charge of them.
Yeah. Or
especially when people don't engage with them.
Like, you know, it's the concept's important is my point. Like, the application, let's talk about it. You know, you want to talk about how it's not working, what needs to change? Fuck yeah. Anyway, where was I going with this? Oh, but just, yeah, like, I don't know. We're talking about cults. Let's get back to culting.
Business cults.
Yeah. I mean, it's all kind of, you know, it's a gray area all the way down, right? It's just fucking, it's cults all the way down. You're not fooling anybody.
Right. Nothing isn't a cult.
I was the other day, I was like kind of, sometimes I go down the flat earther rabbit hole because I just find it like, the question I always have is just like, why does this matter to you? Why do you need the earth to be flat? That's the only question I have. I
was literally just thinking that.
Like, we can't debate reality here. I just want to know why you're so hooked on this. Like, what is it?
Yeah, why?
Why does it matter?
Why does this matter so much to you? What? Okay, so like, let's say you're right.
Yeah.
Right? Like, let's just say, oh my God, some new shit has come to light.
Yeah. Remember when Ned and Meg live podcasted as they sailed off the edge of the world?
Right.
Fell to their deaths or whatever.
Fell
into the void or whatever the fuck's down there.
And as we went down, we were screaming, "You were right!"
My favorite thing about Flat Earth is it always just seems to boil down to like their just fundamental misunderstanding of down.
Yes, this is kind of how like you and I were talking that one time about the shape of black holes.
Yes,
and like people don't understand that it's like a sphere, not like a dot or a drawing on a wall.
Right. Like, right. Yeah.
Yep. And all the light goes to the center, so like you can't. When you look at it, you're not seeing anything because nothing's reflecting back at you.
It's right.
Not actually black. Like
right. Right.
Oh yeah, down.
I'm just like actually you don't you have this you just have this fundamental misunderstanding of down. You don't understand that it's not real, like it doesn't exist.
Yeah, right.
There's gravity, that's a thing,
right?
Space, we got all that shit going on. But anyway.
When we were talking earlier about how people need like hard edges to lean up against,
yeah,
and that's a metaphor for like rules and structure and being told what to do when and things.
Yes,
like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you ever seen a cat in zero gravity?
I feel like maybe I.
They like I think they
really
the,
struggle. Like
yeah, because they, they're like, and they twist at the midsection like halfway.
Yes. Yep.
So like their back legs are pointing up and their front legs are pointing
yes,
down,
yes.
And they're like, I can't figure out where to put my feet.
Right.
That's like I feel like yes. that image of a cat like
yes.
trying desperately
yeah.
with the two halves of his body going in completely different directions.
Right.
To like cling right. to anything solid.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's what cults do for people. They're like, here, hang onto this cat tree. But here's the deal. You're going to have to accept these weird things about this cat tree. Like, it's made out
right.
of astroturf and it smells like bananas. Yes. And everyone's like, no problem. Just don't take the tree away from me, please.
Just don't take the tree.
Finally, somebody's handing me a tree. Oh, God. But yeah, like what I want to ask a flat earth person, flat earth believer, flat earth or whatever. Like, okay,
yeah.
so what happens if you're, but what if you're right? Then what?
Right.
So what? So fucking
yeah.
what?
Right.
What? Nobody plans for after the crime. I've never heard any, like in the context of listening to people talk about their beliefs about the flat earth, I have never heard anybody answer the question, so?
Right.
Like, so what? So what? So what if it is flat? So what?
Right.
Like, where? What then?
Right. Mm. Yes.
I mean.
Can we, maybe we need to start the, like, the flat earth astronomical, not astronomical, like, rocket agency.
Yeah. Like, how does that work? Oh, dear. Oh,
like there's just, it could be like our feet. There's a fee for that. Fuck. Who was I talking to the other day? Somebody was like, I got an app for you. I think it was my friend John who I work with. He was just like, mm-hmm. I think it was him. He was like, I got this great idea. Like, it's just going to be an app you just pay a fee for. It was like, oh my God, that's the one.
See, this idea, we could be millionaires by now. Guilt free.
Yeah. I mean, okay, I don't know about guilt-free. I don't know.
Okay.
I mean, I don't, like, what I feel.
You know what this reminds me of?
I don't
this
feel, yeah, good.
Of, like, in the movie Office Space, where they set up the code to, like,
yes.
take fractions of a penny,
yes.
and then overnight
yep.
they end up with, like, way too much money, and they freak out.
Yeah.
That would be us with this app.
That's it, right? Like,
We would get ourselves, if we were wildly successful and made like internet money off this app, and by that I mean like on the order of millions of dollars overnight, or like hundreds of millions of dollars for nothing, like a runaway money train, right?
Yeah, right.
How would we even like get the money? Are we allowed to have the money? Whose money is this? Like, we're not an entity. I mean, like, so many legal issues would arise from our success. No, I can't even imagine.
Nope. I know exactly. I mean, look, I know exactly. Like, my company is halfway set up for that, right? Like, I have, I have a company. It's just me, but like, I know exactly what we would do to do it. Like, there's no, like, the thing that could happen is that, you know, there'd need to be some legal consideration in terms of, like, we would for sure consult a lawyer before we went live.
Be like, well, we know one of them for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, probably get a couple of legal opinions and then, you know, decide to do it knowing that there's, like, you know, very real likelihood that there's going to be a lawsuit, all these things. And you just, you know, it's like the money comes in and it just goes in an account and you're just like, yep. You know, but like, we'd use some, you know, pay service so they, you know, they get their cut or whatever. So they're interested in it working, you know, but they're also interested in protecting their brand. So they're going to, like, you know, potentially fall on one end or the other. And, you know, or probably what happens is, you know, it kind of it just ramps up slow and it just starts to take off. And then you got fucking, you know. Anyway.
And then the hockey stick.
Yeah. And then the hockey stick. The hockey stick's the scary part, right? It's like, how much money do you get beforehand? How, like, liable are you for the hockey stick? Like, that kind of shit. But
there's an organization in Minneapolis that provided, like, funds to get people out on bail pre-trial. And so that they didn't have to sit in jail just because they didn't have any money.
Right.
And after the summer of 2020, they got so much money. They were like a tiny little thing.
Right.
And people heard about them and were giving money to them to help, like, protesters who had been arrested and stuff. And they ended up with millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars overnight for an organization that had, like, an annual operating budget of, like, $50,000.
Right. And so, like,
they were like, oh, fuck.
So this is the thing to me. The fact that we are talking about it. With the understanding of, like, what's our liability here? You know, how is this? We know it's wrong. Like, in wrong is not the right word. It makes us uneasy because we know it's exactly what it is, which is like, hey, how do I take money from a bunch of people?
For no reason.
Like, how do I tell people to give me a bunch of money and then have them, like, have enough people give me enough money to make it worth it? And so
more problematic.
And so the thing about that is that, like, you and I imagine, and probably most of our listeners are pretty on board with this kind of idea, which is the idea of, like, let's not have companies be able to do that very easily. Let's live in a society where the citizen is not the prey for these overarching, like, conglomerate power systems that can just suck up all of our wealth. And by wealth, I mean our immediate resources we need to do things like live and have access to healthcare and eat food and go to the bathroom and have a shelter. Like, you know, those things, like, you know, traditionally are protected by governmental regulation. And so, you know, so we have laws, right? And so that's the question is, like, you know, we're talking about, like, let's look at the system and how can we, you know, look at the laws and be like, well, this, the law will not prevent this. Let's do it. And then people are going to give us money. And, you know, I mean, who fucking knows the reality of it? I'm just saying, if it worked out, like, that's what we're proposing. And so then the real question is, like, how do we kind of help make these things not possible?
Yeah.
Like, is that a way? Is that a way to do it? I'm not trying to justify it more. I'm just like, is a way to do it is to do it and then point out how fucked up it is with the money? Like, take the money and be, or whatever, take the money and be like, now we've started a legal fund that does this thing, that lobbies for the closure of the fucking, you know, that lobbies for consumer advocacy.
I was like, what if we just, like, invested the money? And then, like, gave it all back to people with interest. That would be crazy.
Sure. I mean, there's lots of...
And I'm like, now we're just a bank.
Yeah. I mean, now you're... I mean, that gets into... But, like, you know... But that also gets into the part of, like, how do you help people and when you have money?
Yeah.
How do you help?
Right. Like, well, okay, let's say we amass all this money. Then what do we do with it?
Right.
Where does that go? How do we spend it?
Yeah. I mean, I just am in a big believer of like having a good government and like working the system we have. But
Damon told me,
yeah,
here's what we do with the money. We rent out Venice.
Yes. Yeah. God, I loved that. The quotes, I love the people of Venice were just like talking about this shit they were going to do. Like that one guy was like, there is no way he's getting access to anywhere in Venice. We are going to pile our bodies upon the bridges and paths and boats and whatever we need to do. He will not have access. It was fucking great. I was fucking amazing.
Did they leave Venice?
I haven't followed it since then, but
oh my God, I want to know what actually happened.
Yeah, it's probably worth looking into. If you're not at all clear on what we're talking about, it's June 27th, 2025, and a little while ago, maybe like last week or something, it was in the news that Jeff Bezos is basically crashing Venice with like his wedding party and having like a, what was it, like a 4-day or 3 or 4-day event, like wedding or 3-day wedding or something in Venice. Yeah. And the people understandably are like, we're already having a problem with tourism, and the idea that this like ultra rich person can just rent like the entire city is, whether this is all true or not, in terms of like what his intentions are or were, because they've obviously changed now, like, is unclear to me because I just read like the one article, so I don't know if more information is available. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of the context we're talking about, is the Jeff Bezos wedding plans.
The internet says they did get married, so they managed to get married.
Yep. Well, I mean, good for them. Like, go to the fucking courthouse and get married. Good job.
Yeah. Right.
I don't know about the rest of it.
Yeah, the whole problem was that they basically like rented out the entire
It doesn't matter about the wedding part.
It's like being like, okay, well, this is now all of our private party space, so all of you just have to go away.
Yeah, it was there was a lot of it just was really politically a poor choice timing, if nothing else, just because the city is already talking about the impact of tourism and how negatively it's impacting the people who actually live there and all of these things. And I don't want to dismiss any of that. I'm just like, the people were already like, the whole point is like, they were just like, no, we're already fed up with this. And then the fact
you don't get to own everything.
Yeah.
That's what this is about. You don't get to fucking own everything, especially stuff that other people already own.
Right.
Like, if we're going to go in on this whole ownership thing,
yeah, then respect.
And I'm not
going
to rabbit hole on that right now. Right. We're going to just accept that like private property ownership is a thing, and that there are public spaces that are collectively owned. Like, you don't just get to unilaterally swoop in and be like, I own this for today.
Right.
Like, fuck you, man. Right? Fuck you. Also, we're going to egg your yacht, and then you're going to have weird paint issues on your yacht because egg takes paint off of things. $10
eggs. $10
eggs. Gonna wing them at your stupid ass yacht. It's just like, I don't know. I just kind of wonder, like, if they're gonna insist on like continent hopping and just show up and change the whole fucking program for days at a time where other people live.
That's fucked up.
I wonder how long that's gonna last.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's yeah. It's kind of crazy. I think they're, I don't know if you've followed, like, it seems like the super yacht thing has kind of taken off a lot, where I think that I imagine that these like ultra rich people are kind of imagining somehow that it's like, they can kind of escape onto their yacht or whatever.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Like, and they got to know, like, I have to imagine, like, that's... They clearly haven't spent as much time at sea as like they don't understand, like,
right,
you don't,
yeah, like you guys are gonna kill each other if you have to stay on a boat offshore for like a month or longer or forever.
And also just like, the amount of infrastructure that it actually takes to support a yacht like that.
See, this is what like they don't seem to understand, like, you guys, the more you rely on your money for everything.
Yeah, it's just that's the real, like, yeah,
dependent you become. It's a trap.
I like the doomsday prepping where And I don't want to talk about, like, what I mean is, like, the doomsday prepping of, like, the ultra rich is kind of hilarious to me, because it doesn't, you're like, man, you just spent a lot of energy on something that is, like, at best buying you, like, a couple of nice years at the end of shit, as opposed to taking any of that energy and dumping it into, like, not having there be doomsday situations. You're a fucking rich person now. You can do all kinds of impactful shit.
Yeah.
Like, hugely impactful in local community, at global scale, like, you know, and the best part is you don't have to fucking think it up. There's a lot of people who are already talking about and thinking about how to better apply and be better for everyone.
Yeah.
But that's not what they
fucking know. Did I tell you, have we talked about Douglas Rushkoff's book that's called Survival of the Richest? Escape Fantasies of the...
Oh, yes. Yeah, I was actually thinking of that. I haven't read it. I'd like to. I can't remember the name of that book. It's a good one, though.
Survival of the Richest.
Yeah.
Escape Fantasies of the...
You read that, right?
I haven't read it yet.
Oh, okay.
But but it's on my list, and I really want to. And it kind of, like, did you watch Mountainhead yet?
No.
Okay, if you all haven't seen Mountainhead, you got to watch it, because it's very... It basically is, like, so real. It's a movie and it's fiction, but the characters are all drawn from, like, actual living.
Oh, this is a,
like,
very recent release, like, last month. Okay, so I don't need to feel so bad for not having watched.
No. Mountainhead is really new, and the Survival of the Richest book is very new. So, Douglas Rushkoff, I'll read this from his website. Five mysterious billionaires summoned theorist Douglas Rushkoff to a desert resort for a private talk. I've read some of his other books, and they're great. The topic? How to survive the event, the societal catastrophe they know is coming. Rushkoff came to understand that these men were under the influence of the mindset, a Silicon Valley-style certainty that they and their cohort can break the laws of physics, economics, and morality to escape a disaster of their own making as long as they have enough money and the right technology. And what's hubristic and humorous about this is that they see themselves as completely, like, independent and on top of things and, like, separate from...
Yes.
And don't understand that, like, no matter how, like, interdependency is a hyper object because it's too big for you to actually understand the complexity of, and the more you try to get away from it, the more entrenched in it you become.
Right.
So, like, their whole thing about building this, like, hyper complicated, very expensive reality in which they, like, survive, what they're kind of overlooking is that, like, if all the shit goes away, the very things that support the thing that they're making go away with it. And so, like, the more complicated they make it and the more dependent on this idea they become, the more intertwined it is with all of the rest of our survival. And there's no getting out. Like, it's so funny to me that they don't see that.
Right.
They're very... Yes. And, like, Douglas Rushkoff writes about all kinds of pop culture stuff and, like, the zeitgeist. Uh-huh. And so they, like, told him when they summoned him, and this is something that I know from reading some other interviews with him and stuff.
Yeah.
They summoned him and they're like, you know what people are thinking. How do we deal with this? And he's like, really? Like, why don't you tell me everything and I'm going to write it down and then I'm going to make a book out of it instead.
Right.
So that's what he did. He just had all these conversations with them. And it's basically like this book, I think, is kind of sort of like inspiration for the movie Mountainhead.
Yeah.
If Douglas Rushkoff wasn't there and the reason for their meeting was some other plot, right? Some other money making thing and not like to talk to some. So, like, I don't know.
What's the book called again?
The book is called Survival of the Richest.
Right.
And the movie is Mountainhead, and they are not the same thing. Like, one is not based on the other or like whatever, but they both talk about the same thing, which is the mindset. And the mindset is a set of, like, assumptions and principles derived from those assumptions, many of which are obviously faulty.
right,
that undergird all of the activities, projects, schemes, and aspirations of this like group of like basically space billionaires and like people who want to control everything, like Palantir and all that stuff. So I've in a number of different spaces, in a number of different contexts, I have read about this thing that he labels the mindset. And like, I'm just like, man, like a lot of their core assumptions are like wildly wrong.
Right.
Yes. Kind of like, you know, we've talked a number of times about the Titan sub, right? And I'm like,
yes.
Okay, so these are not subtle problems.
Right.
Like these are big
Yeah.
baseline yep. foundational assumptions about the nature of reality that are not correct. And because you're making choices based on what you think these details are, you are going to fail. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
You are planning for a reality that doesn't exist.
It's like, what were we talking about earlier? Just about the nature of reality. Oh, just asking. Oh, the flat earthers just being like.
Yeah.
Like, but why does this matter to you? Like, why do you need it to be flat? Like, let's say it is flat, but look at all this wonderful working, like, model information we can use to do cool shit like space rockets that works. Yeah, like, so can we just use that anyway? Because it works.
Right.
Like we'll just say it's flat. Like, is that enough? Like, sorry.
Yeah. Like, all of the numbers and stuff and all of the reasons why all this other stuff works that we're, like, living with is because the Earth is round or ovoid or whatever. Yeah. So, like, how would any of that math work out if shit was flat?
Like I know
it's just weird.
I know. Yep, the Earth is definitely flat. 100% agree with you. I'm going to use the GPS, though. Is that cool? Or, like, like, we don't have to give that up, do we? Because that's pretty fucking
pretty
great.
Neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, I don't even know what to say.
Anyway, cults though. See, this cults. Is where I think like it's just about
you
a good narrative.
You can choose any of these details and make a cult out of it.
Yeah.
We encourage you to no, we don't.
I mean,
maybe.
No, we don't. Don't do that. But if you're going to do a cult anyway, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah, tell us all about it.
I'm suddenly reminded of that game Cult of the Lamb. I don't know if you've played it or if you
it's
watched
fabulous.
One of the kids playing it.
It's so good. I love it.
It is very good. That's
I love the style. I mean the aesthetics of it.
Oh,
like
yeah.
I love the type of game that it is, like the actual yep. gameplay. I love the music best of all.
Oh, the music's so great. Yeah.
I love how adorable everything is.
Yes. Like it's just the adorable atrocities that are being committed. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like,
yep. See, this is like something that I really enjoy is a little of column A and a little of column B.
Yes.
But like jumbled together in a way that's like, okay, so something terrible, cults and like human sacrifice. And like poop. There's a lot of poop in the game, which is very funny.
Yes.
Anything becomes funnier when poop's involved.
Right.
And then there's like a mashed up with adorable little like farm creatures.
Yes. Yeah.
And like and like a farming game in a way.
Yeah. Yep.
Resource management, adorable little game. And you know, it's like some worship of the dark side mixed in.
Of course.
It's so great.
That's where I feel
unexpected
like
unexpected combinations.
Yeah. Like I feel like modern cults miss out on that like deep, dark, secrety like this is where I feel like
the hermeneutical knowledge that you gain access to that like, reveals mystic secrets.
Yeah. Like this is where I think Scientology really has an edge, right? Like they've got like space demon threat, right? Or whatever the fuck they've got secreted.
747 space planes in volcanoes and souls and thetans and
like it's
I've said too much.
It's good shit. You know what I mean? Like and the best part is like they're fucking secretive about it. So like it's, you know, doing it right, A+ for culting. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like that's the kind of cult you want, right? Like is it evil? It is evil. But like, ooh, what's going on over there? Like, you know.
Where's Shelley Miscavige, David?
Right? you know, like, and I don't want to make light of people's lives who have been really fucked up by Scientology, which is absolutely a fucked up thing. But
it's a total disaster. Yeah. People go, like, they get robbed blind.
Yeah. No, and yeah, and the fucking church is like so fucking litigious and fucked up and just really predatory on its members, and yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
Where was I going to go? Cults. Yeah, let's get them. Collect them all.
Collect them all.
Get in there and get your cult on.
I mean, God. Okay, so should we like make a deck of cards that are like the suits and stuff are like?
I believe cults. That exists. I think we need to make a book. I think we need to make a book of all the cults we think should exist that don't.
That's a brilliant idea.
Like, you can do art. I think as we progress with Burbs, it's become clear that I think that's one of our exceptional formats is like the it's a double page spread. What do you call it? A spread. It's a spread.
Yep.
Yeah, like the spread format. It's like art on one side, or maybe a mix of art and language, but like, you know, text and art we can describe and talk about, and then paint pictures and then paint inspiring images of cults.
Do you know, the other day I was flipping through my Google photos and I ran past an image of the baby looking out of the plane window with the turbine. Yes. Made me really so laugh. Good. Is an image from our other book, Every Time a Bell Rings. It's very
yes.
funny.
Yeah, it is.
Even funny. Religious believers find it funny. That's a ringing endorsement.
That is a ringing endorsement.
A real live person I know who really believes in God and Jesus liked that book.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a very good book. Mm-hmm.
Get it.
Get it. Yeah.
Get it. Get it wherever. Bye. No. I don't even know where it is. You can
email us. Email Google. Us if you're email just. Email us. If you're like, I don't know, and you're really interested, if you send us an email, we will probably email you back and you know, send you either a link, or we can give you a discounted link for sure. I think we can give you a discounted link if you maybe. If it's not priced at a price that you're happy to pay for.
Yeah.
Yeah, no problem.
Well,
like, you know, I mean, we can basically sell it to you at cost, right? Like, you can email us and we'll be like, I think I've got a way to do that. So
yeah. I mean, if we started a book cult, I think that would probably be pretty benign.
I think it would be just like hoarders of books. Like, how does it, I mean, tell me about this book.
What's
cult.
This book cult?
Yeah.
Why, like, have you been holding out on me?
Is it, is it just literally like focused on like printed materials?
Oh yeah. It's for printed books. I will accept codices as well.
Okay.
But gotta be like a material object and not like a digital something.
Okay. So it's the, Could I suggest that it paper. Could be
tablets. Tablets are cool in this cult.
I was gonna say more like it needs to meet or exceed the
clay tablets, not electronic tablets.
No. I was gonna say it needs to be like the information needs to be stored in such a way that you can immediately access it as a human being holding the object.
Yes.
And
does that rule out having to read?
Yeah. No. You have to be able to read. I'm just saying that it's not unreasonable for an individual to hold all of the knowledge and tools within them in order to access the data.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and so what I mean by that is like, you can't be like, CDs might last a really long time, but it can't be a CD. You need equipment in order to access the data.
Gotcha.
Like magnetic tape storage, you still need equipment in order to access the data. As well, whereas a scroll with written word on it, you can do that with like clay tablets. Like, you and I don't speak cuneiform or read cuneiform, I'm assuming. Right. Or at least I don't. I wouldn't ever presume to speak for you, except for like 90% of the time when I do in the social circles. Like, no, Meg feels this way. No, Meg feels that. No. Meg doesn't want that. No. We could have been so much more intolerable than dying. We were. When we,
oh my God, right? Just troublemakers.
It's just like the worst.
Like, I am now the court jester, and I don't take any of this seriously.
When we worked together, we could have been so much more intolerable than we were. Because I feel like people kind of took issue with it, but I feel like we were, I mean, we care about a lot of the people we work with. So yeah. I think we were trying not to like just be fucking assholes the whole time.
Yeah. For sure.
Anyway, so my point about the book idea is like that maybe is our criteria, right? Like it needs to be something that is of reasonable permanence, at least as long as permanent as a book. You know, mm-hmm. and then also like it doesn't require
books are
specific tools.
Durable.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. You know? They're very durable. There's a lot of, you know, but I thought of that because I was like, so there's magnetic media is fairly durable. Mm-hmm. Considered one of the best long-term storages, I think, for like digital information. But I was like, but the problem is you still need a machine to read it. You still need, need equipment. Like anyone needs that equipment. I'm not talking about like you or me needing glasses to read.
Right.
Or like, I'm more just like, it's reasonable that like someone with their eyes could look at this and then, you know, directly access the information.
Right.
So that's the cult of the book requirements is to my mind. So it could be any kind of written, typed letters, whatever. I don't see an issue with that so much as just like, but are we information hoarding cult or is there something more? Is it more about the forwarding of like, is the idea not so much that we're the hoarders of the information, but more the champions of it, like the champions of the formats?
Oh, right. Like we worship books.
Yeah. Yeah, like we're champions of the format of the book. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, the printed word, newspaper, things. Well, maybe not.
Which is probably why we'll be like an old-timey cult.
Yeah, sure. Which is like, why, yeah, like, I definitely think we need to. So here's, to my mind, an important aspect to really give the vibe of a cult would be to have these sort of like secret-y knowledges. Right. Mm-hmm. That like the inner that you know, that like I don't want them to be core. Like I don't want at the core to be like, you know, we believe that like, you know, we're all going to turn into books or whatever and live in the great library in the sky or whatever. I just mean more like, okay, maybe that's a great idea. Never mind. But it certainly sounds a lot more enjoyable than most versions of heaven I've heard from people. Just like, that sounds just intolerably miserable.
I know, right?
Yeah.
There was such a good television show.
Yeah.
With Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph.
Uh-huh.
God, what was it called? Maybe it was called Afterlife. It was like a mini series.
The Last Man or something? Or
no, Last Man on Earth is Will Forte.
Oh,
and
that's
it's
right.
Fucking amazing. And Kristen Schaal is his wife.
Yes,
Carol.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah,
oh
yeah,
my God. Yep. That show is one of my favorite shows of all time because I love Will Forte. The weirder he gets, the more funny I think he is. But no, this one's about like Fred Armisen and Maya Rudolph and they die. And then they're like, oh, but like, wait a minute. I thought the afterlife was going to be like heaven, but like, I didn't picture you being in it.
Right.
And so like, it's about that.
Yes.
And like their versions of heaven didn't like include each other in the hypothetical and then they die. And then they're like, oh, you're here. Yes. Oh my God, so great. There's in the Last Man on Earth.
Yeah.
Man, that came out at a time where my personal life was looking pretty grim.
Uh-huh.
And I barely like made it through. And then like that show was like, oh, well, what happens when you're like the only survivor, which is a little bit how I felt in a weird way. It was pretty grim for the first couple of episodes. And then it gets really funny. And like January Jones is a character, like she was Don Draper's wife on Mad Men. So she's like classically like Aryan beautiful. Right.
Right.
And
right,
like, right. Will Forte meets Kristen Schaal's character Carol on the show and he thinks that there are no other surviving people and so he and Carol get married and she makes him go through this whole like pageantry even though there's nobody else and there's no reason for them to get married anymore because there's no superstructure to society in which marriage is meaningful in the slightest considering its a legal status and so anyway he like marries Carol and like the next minute January Jones pops up and he's super pissed because she's so beautiful. And then they all have to live together because there's nobody else left on Earth. It's just the three of them. Anyway, and one of my absolute favorite episodes is like occasionally, to keep the plot going ostensibly, like random people pop up or it's like, oh, we're not alone. Look at this person's here now. Right. So there are others out there and that keeps it moving forward. And like all kinds of people do cameos on the show as like the lone stranger who shows up. And one of them, like they determine somebody has appendicitis. And so they decide that the only option is to risk an appendectomy or this person's definitely going to die. Right. So they're like, all right, we're just going to go for it, and they basically just kill him immediately.
Oh Jesus.
Like they try to do an appendectomy on him and he just like dies.
God.
So funny. It's just like instant. Like there's no tension, there's no buildup, there's no Willy Wonka. He's like, nope, we just killed him. Oh gosh. Oh, that's terrible. I just think like, man, that's so accurate.
Yep. Like, yep.
Has anyone here done surgery before? Well, I've carved a turkey. Like, okay, I guess you're it. God. I guess you're a surgeon now. Oh God, it's so funny.
It is very funny.
I mean, this is like to tie it all back to the Douglas Rushkoff thing. It's like, okay, dickheads, what happens when one of you needs a fucking appendectomy or you break a hip? And there's no one around to care for you because you thought you were invincible and you eliminated the possibility.
Right.
Oh, God. So funny.
Yeah.
What would a surgery cult be like? I mean, I guess that's just plastic surgery, right?
Yeah. I mean,
is plastic surgery a surgery cult?
I mean, I guess a lot of it depends on how you... Like how surgery centric does it need to be? Like,
oh, Damon says it looks like Escape from LA with the Surgeon General of Beverly Hills. Touché.
Like the movie Escape from LA. That's right. Great.
That's totally already been done. We figured that one out. We don't even have to
solved.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we're at the 51-minute mark on our little gems for the people. So I guess this is like a whole episode just about us talking about weird cults.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe this is cult number two.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. Well, maybe we fooled you and it's not. Don't mean to be alarmist, but we started a cult.
Yeah.
All of this was a joke. We didn't mean any of it.
Right. Definitely.
Nobody's starting a cult.
Exactly.
Unless we are, but we're not. But right. Maybe we would, but we didn't.
But if you're interested in books, you know who to email. Dana. D-A-N-A at fcbm.io. If you send an email to her, she will look, Dana gets to see it and we'll see it. Everyone, like, you're emailing us, just to be clear. You're just sending an email. You're like, but I want to talk to Ned and Meg. Like, if you send an email to that email address, we'll all see it and be delighted. And it'll be great. And we will respond to you by email. And then if you want to have us mention you on the podcast, we will. But if you don't, we definitely won't. So no worries. Right. Nor will we collect your personal information or any of that. We're just like, it'll just be like you just have our phone number and you texted us, except it's email. That's it. I don't know. What do I know? I don't know why I'm like, I just get so fucking tired of the constant fucking like barrage of like shit fucking clamoring for my information. And I'm just so like, most people don't give a fuck. Otherwise we wouldn't, if people gave a fuck, we wouldn't live in this world in the first place.
Yeah.
No one would be fucking standing for it, which is why it's like, this salesperson came to my door the other day and, and she was this very young blonde woman, like very young, like wearing like a school skirt, like a school uniform skirt, kind of like a pleated, like, and I was like, what's happening? And, she was talking about like, you know, she was handling the bugs for the neighbors and she kept asking me like what I was going to do about the bugs in my backyard or something. And, and I finally figured, she's like, you're going to see our trucks going around or my trucks and my guys are doing this or whatever. And, and I just was like, well, if you have a card, like I'll take your card and maybe I'll consider it. I don't know. I just was like in the middle of work. I'm like, I don't want to deal with this. Like whatever. But like her attempt to leverage her, like, her dialogue in terms of, like, the way she was saying shit and, like, trying to engage me and ask questions. Mm-hmm, and, like, mm-hmm. And I just was, like, every moment, like, hating it more and more. And I was just like, I'm not giving you shit. I don't have any information for you. She's like, are you the owner of the house? I'm like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, well, this. And I was like, okay, sure, leave a card in the mailbox. She's like, I didn't bring a card. I'm like, well, then I don't know what to tell you. I'm going to go.
Nice. Way to go.
It's just the other day I was house sitting for this guy. I was house sitting for some friends in Napa and the fucking sales guy like comes up and
oh my God.
And I, you know, knocks on the door and the dog barks because that's why I'm there, is to fucking look after the dog. And not fucking, he's a great dog. Well, fucking fuck damn right. Yeah. Fuck yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Fuck
yeah.
Fucking great dog. Anyway, look after the dog, see my friends, etc. And so it's the middle of the day, guy knocks on the door. I'm polite the first time, right?
Oh God.
I know there is a sign that says no solicitors, right? Mm-hmm. But the first time I was like, he's like, hey, you know, and I was like, look, I don't own the home. I can't make any of this decision. Sorry. And he's like, oh, okay. Well, I mean, do you know if they'll be back? Can you tell? I'm like, I'm not giving you any of that information.
Right?
I hope you understand. I'm not going to tell you anything about anything. So thank you very much. Have a good day. So then, like the next day, he comes by again.
What?
And I look at him and I look at the sign on the door and I was like, did you see that? He's like, yeah, but you know, most people just don't care. And I was like, I looked at him in the eye and I was like, well, I think you should reconsider that position. Thank you very much. And I shut the door. And like, but like the thing about it is like, it's,
oh, bravo.
I just find it's exhausting. To be assaulted, like these people who like have chosen this as a profession, like they're fucking out on the end of a spear stuck out there. Like they, this is their fucking livelihood. Like, you know, maybe they got some encouragement. I don't know how the fuck they found themselves in this position, but like this is the fucking nature of our current economy.
Yep.
There are jobs that your one job is to go fucking pressure people into buying a product they don't fucking need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or, you know, whatever. I mean, you can convince yourself otherwise, but like, you know, the truth is, like, it's a lot of shit we don't need that people are out there, like, building advertising for and stuff. And it's just fucking intense. Anyway.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, so much of it is emotional. Like, there's this exercise that I do where, like, if I, especially if it's something that is an unexpected expense, like, not something I plan for, I think, what is the emotion this is making me feel right now? And how is me spending money the solution to it?
Right.
Like, I try to think about, like, who's manipulating me emotionally and am I on board with it or not?
Yep. But the fact that you have to do that.
Yeah.
And and not you, like we, us.
The royal,
like,
you.
Yeah, like all of us have to do that on some level to maintain. And, you know, maybe you're really good at it. And so it doesn't, like, you know, one is very good at it. And so they don't think about it that hard. They're like, whatever, it's pretty easy. I don't really fucking think about it. Like, I, you know, and also you're like, the money I have is balanced with the little bits of shit that people manage to take from me. So I don't care, whatever. Like, you know, you don't think, but so many of us who are just fucking drowning.
Yes.
And that's what I think is just really sad about, like, the state of it. Is like, it's just this, like,
it's a cacophony.
Yeah, it's just like constant barrage for your money and your time and your resources.
You know what it sounds like me is like, what, oh God, I don't even know if this is a thing for people anymore, but you remember when you used to be able to turn the television to static and it was just like,
yes. Oh, love that. Yeah,
that's what, like, turn that volume up really high,
right?
And then just stand right next to the speaker and like, that's what it feels like to me.
Yeah,
it's just the, like, interference, the sound of interference and static and noise and like a cacophony and just a wall of sound that there's almost no differentiation. And then when you turn it off, like the contrast.
Oh, my friends and I used to have like a lot of our hangout spots had a TV that was just turned to static, like always, like just kind of low. It was like, you know how people white like to noise. Have like a white noise, and it was just like kind of a white noise. And it was like, oftentimes if we were just trying to like chill out, we'd have like that turned on, and then that was the only light in the room, and we like hang out and chat and drink and smoke or whatever we were doing. Like,
yeah. It was, like, if that's white noise, then I think like what we're experiencing is just like the full rainbow of noise, just like all the colors all at once, every frequency.
That's the white noise. The white, so it's like
oh, it adds. That's right, because it's like
Yeah, so you go, so and the descriptions of the noise, as I understand it, and I'm maybe butchering it a little bit, there's, you can filter out frequencies and get things like pink noise and brown noise and gray noise, like these different sort of colors that people describe, which are basically like, so white noise is sort of considered like equal volume across the spectrum, right? Like, so every frequency has sort of a similar, you know, intensity. Maybe
that's what our cult is about.
White noise?
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, could we...
Is brown noise about poop?
Brown noise is about poop, indeed. Yes.
Yeah. There are other cults that successfully incorporate poop. I think we might be onto something like that.
Might be onto something like that. I do feel like if we're going to have a cult of books, that we would be remiss not mentioning the Library of Babylon.
Oh, yeah. And the Library at Alexandria.
Sure, but the Library of Babylon being the book of every books, or the library of every books.
The library of every book.
Which is something you can go to on the internet now and find every book that ever existed.
Incredible.
Yeah. Have we never, I feel like we've talked about this.
I don't think so. But I have been known
to
forget.
Sorry, Library of Babel, not Babylon.
Oh,
Library
of Babel.
Yeah, Library of Babel. So if you go to libraryofbabel.info, you can, really quick, Library of Babel, I'm just going to, I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but maybe not. Let me see if I can give like a good...
Oh, I like at this website, libraryofbabel.info, when you hold your mouse or your cursor over the words in the menu, it like, it changes weird.
Yes. Yeah. So that's...
It scrambles. The letters scramble at high speed.
So... The Library of Babel is a short story by Argentine author and librarian Jorge Luis Borges.
Jorge.
He was Borges.
Yeah.
And he was.
I just heard his name spoken yesterday. That's why I know.
Oh, no kidding.
Yes, what a weird coincidence.
Yeah. So 1899 to 1986. Mm-hmm. So he wrote this short story, and essentially the short story is about. Basically, the narrator describes his universe consists of an enormous expanse of adjacent hexagonal rooms. In each room, there is an opening on the floor to the hexagons above and below. Four walls of bookshelves and two junctions between each hexagon, each containing a latrine, a sleeping closet, and a stairwell. Though the order and content of the books are random and apparently completely meaningless, the inhabitants believe that the books contain every possible ordering of just 25 basic characters. So 22 letters, the period, the comma, and space. So,
what?
So that means that the vast majority of the books in this universe, where all permutations of that possible sort of ordering exist, the most of the books are going to be pure gibberish.
Gibberish.
But the laws of probability dictate that the library must also contain somewhere every coherent book ever written, or that might ever be written, that fits within this context, right?
Yep.
And every possible permutation or slightly erroneous version of every one of those books. So somebody has, because of the nature of computers and computation, we can actually create this entire data set to explore this theoretical data set. So if you go to the Library of Babel .info, or you just Google, get on the Googler and type in Library of Babel. It's like one of the first hits. You can randomly pull up excerpts. You can pull up a book and have a page of text, and you can
see. There's also theory.
Yeah, there's theory. There's a lot. It's a really deep, interesting concept. One of the cool things you can do is you can search for your name.
Oh.
Or you can search for text, right? And so you can you could type in your name, for instance, and it will provide you pages where that text string shows up.
Oh my gosh.
And so, you know, like it's,
oh yeah, I typed in my name and there it is.
So there's kind of some cool stuff you can do with this. So for instance, like I could send a top secret message to you by,
Wow. This, I'm like stunned. I'm over here flipping through this. And like, it's kind of fascinating. This is super weird and amazing. How did you find out about this? Did you say how you found out about this? How do you know that this exists?
So I read the, I read the short story.
Okay.
And then I knew about it. And then, you know, somewhere in college, whenever, I can't remember, somebody had pointed out that somebody was like had decided to make this website. Cause the truth is like, it's a large amount of data, but it's not an infinite amount of data. And there's actually an algorithm they use. I can't remember exactly. The theory will tell you all about it. Like that, okay. One can learn about this, and I don't want to like spend the whole podcast like talking about it. But essentially, this is like the most refined version it's been at for a while. Like they haven't changed it in a little while, but it's, I've known about it for quite a long time. And I remember learning about it in college, like after I'd read the short story, and I was like, oh shit, somebody's like doing this. And so it's pretty cool. Yeah. There's another version, that uses images. So you can, cause you can imagine basically it's like if you had if you have like a 25 by 25 square grid, and mm-hmm. you know, one could just fill in either black or white in each square, you could create some reasonable images with that, right? Yeah. Letters and things. So you can imagine like expanding that to like a, you know, 256 by 256, like 8-bit color bitmap, and sure. do the same thing. And so that library has every single permutation. So you can like do things like so upload cool. You can upload your image and then have the link to where that image is like located in this virtual library or whatever. But like, you know, or you can just keep hitting random. But the thing about keep hitting random is like the odds, it's basically the same as the odds of hitting random and have it coalesce into a meaningful image.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's like nearly virtually none, which is the same thing with the library books. You could just keep hitting random and never, like your whole life, and never land on a page that has a single known word in any language you know of. Like it's so kind of, and so that's kind of gives you, but it is a really cool way to get perspective on the scope of like what big data is like, and like what, mm-hmm. like what the nature of like organized information versus like chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's
see, this is the thing about the book cult. The book cult is the only thing standing between order and chaos.
Yep.
Join the book cult.
Yeah.
Save the world. That's interesting. Are there cults about saving the world, or mostly just cults about saving yourself?
I mean, this is where it gets tricky, because it's mm-hmm. it's kind of a matter of like, how do you want to define that? Like objectively, right. like anybody who looks at it is like, yeah, that's going to be good for the most amount of people. Or are we talking about like their beliefs? Because there's mm-hmm. certainly some cults potentially believe that they are saving the planet.
Right.
They are doing the best work for man, you know?
We're doing such important work, you guys.
Yeah. So.
Well, this website is very cool. I'm going to spend.
It's really cool. It's
fooling around with it.
Yeah.
It's libraryofbabel.info.
Yep. All one word.
Got to check it out.
Yeah. No, it's really cool. I think it's really fun. Maybe we'll do a whole podcast on it. That could be fun.
Yeah.
And talk more about the story, and we can get into a little more of the theory and stuff.
Do we have any colors of the day? I think we do, right?
I think we do. Oh, yeah.
What has our team cooked up for us today?
These are some good ones. All right. We have two colors today. We have mm-hmm. tibial ruck and ducal jaundice. Meg, would you do us the honors of telling us all about tibial ruck, please?
Oh yeah. So tibial ruck is the color of the inside of like a blood orange, and the juice that would come out of it. And its RGB values are 204, 78, 71, mm-hmm. and the hexadecimal is hashtag C C 4E47. Charlie Charlie 4 Echo 47.
Yeah, if you stick that in the Googler, like put in the hashtag CC4E47, it should show you the exact color. But this color
is
a
very fruity color. It's like a fruit punch kind of.
Yeah,
color.
Yeah, like a fruit punch. It's a real kick in the eye.
It's like pinky, but also kind of orangey.
Yeah. Yeah, like it's got a lot of red. You know, the RGB was 204-7871. So it's got a lot of red, and then the green and the blue is balanced, right? So you're mostly kind of in the red zone, but it's lighter, and yeah, and it's got that really, yeah, that sort of fruity, for sure, fruit punch. Like,
yeah.
Like, I could imagine that this would look a little bit like a faded fruit punch sign or something.
Yeah, or like, you know when you get a snow cone and they pour the liquid over the top,
yes,
of the flavoring?
That, yeah, the fruit punch color.
Yes, the fruit punch color after it's been mixed into the snow cone.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yep.
The other one, Ducal jaundice.
Yeah. So
hilarious, because jaundice is like when you have too much bilirubin in your blood and then you turn yellow, like your skin and the whites of your eyes turn yellow.
Yeah.
And this is kind of a yellowy blue.
It is. It is. So the color is, so the red, green, blue values are 51, 177, and 184. So it's mostly blue, but there's quite a bit of green, and then you got that red coming up at the end there. And so it's got this, like, especially when you contrast it with a tibial ruck, you really, mm-hmm. it really, like, that kind of jaundice color comes out to my mind a little bit.
Yes. Yes.
So
the warm tones.
Yeah. The hexadecimal value that you can put into Googler, that's going to be hashtag 33Bravo1Bravo8. Once again, that's hashtag 33B1B8. And you can see it. I think by itself, it might feel more like a more teal color.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I feel like paired with the tibial rocket, it really, the yellow kind of pops out a little bit at me.
Yes, I think you're right about that.
Yeah.
And it also reminds me of, not exactly, but the kind of effect that you get from like 3D glasses where there's like a red and a blue contrast next to each other.
Yes. And, yeah.
Like the margin, like the space at the junction of the red and the blue, when you see them next to each other on the screen, is like very hard to look at.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it's uncomfortable.
It like jumps around in my field of vision. It's not like a static. It looks like it's moving. It's very weird because there's such a strange contrast.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. That's really cool.
It is very cool. Yeah,
I like this color combination a lot.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
I would paint it somewhere. I would definitely paint it somewhere.
Yeah. Well, that's your tip. So these colors, incorporate that. These are colors of the day. So use them today and then never again.
And ever, never again.
Never again. Today is the day. Like, so if you're listening to this in the morning, these are the colors. Don't forget, wear some Ducal jaundice and a little tibial ruck. Your life will be much better. yeah.
Yeah. It'll be your own hermeneutical knowledge, because a lot of work went into making these colors, and then you can just wear them and nobody will know, and it can be your own little secret color cult.
Agreed. Okay. So. Okay. That's going to be maybe our next podcast. We could talk about the hermeneutical knowledge. Hermeneutical.
Yes. Hermeneutical. Hermeneutical.
Yeah.
Like arcane, insider, secretive, known only to whatever.
That's going to be our cult book that we're going to have to write as the cult book. I think that's the one.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.